Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Phil Mothersbaugh, your host for today's Bible discussion on The Good Word. My conversation partners for this study series, as you probably know, but I'll introduce them again, Albert Handel, the administrative and teaching pastor at Walla Walla University Church, and Brant Berglund, the assistant professor and assistant professor, there are several, but he's one of them, of New Testament Studies in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. They work together. Welcome to the program, gentlemen. We've got a whole new discussion for this particular version. Edition. That's the word. And the theme for this study is called Shining as Lights in the Night. And this week's Bible lesson focuses on how members of the Philippian church, according to Paul's urging, were to conduct themselves as followers of Jesus. It seems clear that their reputation in the community was an important component of their witness to the power of Jesus Christ, in contrast to the corrupt generation surrounding them, including both citizens of Philippi and the strong influences of the culture of the Roman Empire. That's a mouthful, but it's clear. Paul says in the memory verse, "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world." Philippians 2:14-15. What seems to be Paul's understanding of God's work in us in chapter 2:13 as it relates to his admonition to shine as lights?
Well, light in darkness is so noticeable. I think about driving on long, dark roads at night, out here in the country around Walla Walla where we live. You can go sometimes for a mile or two and not see another vehicle on some of those roads. And then every once in a while, then you'll see the headlights way up above, miles away. You can see a car. Light is a dramatic push back to darkness. And that is my role in the world, right? I'm to have that kind of impact where when people see me, I look different. I seem different than what everyone else is doing or saying or thinking. That isn't to raise me up on a pedestal, but rather to say that my work in this world is unique and should be noticeable. This is a theme all through the Gospel of John. Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." But then he says, "You are also the light of the world." And we see this in Revelation, that the churches are lamps to the world, right? The churches represent lamps, lights, and it's his job to keep that light shining in me.
Brant, do you think that that's a unique invitation to us simply because of the fall? Do you think Adam and Eve would have shone as lights in their world? I mean, would everybody have been a light? I mean, what does it mean for this invitation to come to humanity? Is this something that we lost?
Perhaps so, that if that light is a representation of Christ, imagine going just a few generations down from Adam and Eve. You get to the time of Noah, and it says that the thoughts and the intentions of the human heart were only evil continually. But there's a bright light. There's Noah, who's blameless in his time, right? Okay, he's different. He's standing out. He's unique in his time. And then I have to ask, okay, what does my world look like? What are the focal points of humanity today? What do people value? What do people want to put money into and time? And is that what I want? Are my priorities different? Do I have a different set of activating principles in my life that make me stand out? That when someone sees me, it's like, "Brant, you're not like everyone else." And what are those qualities? Maybe you can help add to what those might be. What would you want to see in me that would make me a light to my community?
All right, now we've got a discussion, folks. Albert.
Well, I think back to the original question here, Phil, which I think is an excellent question. Mm-hmm. That work that God is doing in us, I really think that Brant is hitting at that idea of it's this return to factory settings. God had an original plan. We have strayed from that original plan, and that work is intended to peel back these layers that have added on parts to us that God never intended to be a part mm-hmm. of our lives. And that return to factory settings can be difficult work. And that, so the transformation that Paul talks about in Romans 12:2 is that transforming ourselves back to the way that God originally intended us. So Paul is looking at this church and he's saying, I know what God wanted for your lives. Here's the path back. Here's the path to return to the factory settings, to be who God knows you can be.
But it's a strange path, isn't it? Because it's not the path of ascension to power. It's the path of humility. Because he just got done saying here in chapter 2, as we saw in last week's lesson, that I'm supposed to have the attitude in me that was in Christ. That is a servant mentality, not a lordship mentality.
Well, the return to factory settings, Adam and Eve were crystal clear that they were not the creators,
right,
that they were the creatures.
Yeah.
They were crystal clears who had the power of life and who were the stewards of that life. Mm. And I think that God is maybe nudging us in every aspect of our lives when we've forgotten who is the creator and who's the creature, who's the giver of life and who's the steward of life. And Paul is maybe nudging the church to say that condescension of Christ is the way back. That humility is the return to who God originally wanted us to be.
Ellen, you mentioned Romans 12, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So your mind goes, I love that, return to factory settings. So you go back to the new way you thought or should have been thinking in the garden. That's I like that analogy.
So let me float out an idea here while you guys are batting this one around. I was thinking of your illustration, Brandt, of light shining out like a car headlight. And it seems to me that if you got people in the car, it helps them see where you're going to. That it's part of your experience that they get to be part of, but there's always this element, it seems like, in church work that people get confused between God's work in me and me trying to do something to make myself approachable for God, and that leads me to the question that I've written down here for today: how does our obedience to Christ fit into working out our salvation without falling into the trap of legalism?
That's a great question for Brent, because I think that's the ongoing question of my life that I'm trying to sort out.
That's a great question for all of us.
if I can bring up an old preacher that I have listened to some and appreciated many, many messages from, but that was Morris Vinden, and he returned again and again to the issue of the will. And we've talked about the will in these studies already in our quarter. I have one work to do with my will, and my will is not to simply do, to simply obey, because truthfully, I have trouble obeying. I have trouble wanting to obey. It starts with the wanting, because I kind of push back against authority. So as soon as there's authority that says do this, my first reaction is, oh, really? But so the first thing I have to recognize is I have a will problem. I have a problem with the things I want to do. And the only solution for that is to give that part to God and say, you got to fix my desires, but the very root causes of who I am, because I want to do all kinds of things that aren't good. To give you a kosher example, if there's a 2-pound bag of Cadbury mini eggs in front of me at Easter time, I'll eat the whole thing in a sitting without thinking twice, and then I feel miserable. And it's like that's a horrible motivation just to live by my desires.
Well, I don't know whether it was Vinden that coined the phrase, but what you reminded me of in that illustration, which I love, is a statement that has stuck with me for years. I've known this for a long time, and I wish I could remember exactly where it came from. It sounds like a Vindenism, if you want to call it that. The prayer to pray is, Lord, make me willing to be willing.
To be willing, yeah, exactly.
And I've made that my daily prayer, because I know that dealing with my will is not easy for me, and it certainly can't be easy for God. So I'm just saying, it's hands down God's operation, and he's got the ability to do it. So,
and that's the first, but when Pastor Albert, when you were saying, back to Romans 12 again, that's the renewal that I need, where I have a heart that wants to do what is right, because I don't start that way. I don't start by nature. The new covenant has to be at work in me.
By contrast, while we're talking about shining as lights, into what kind of world are the Philippians to shine as lights? I mean, how can they effectively accomplish this? And maybe some things that you might think of that could derail this part of these churches' mission in each of their communities.
Well, they were in a world where there was, Paul himself uses the language warped and crooked, a warped and crooked generation. This was a church that was in an incredibly violent and difficult time to be a Christian. And in that sense, you could say there would have been a lot of danger to profess Christ, but there would have been a lot of clarity as well. This wasn't a cool thing to do. This wasn't something that you did as a safe choice. And so Paul is speaking in a very different context than what we would be reading these words. And it's an interesting way to kind of reflect on these thoughts, because that isn't exactly the same world we live in now. Christianity is the dominant religion. And so what it means to be a Christian here, I think, is a little bit different, and yet we're challenged by these words because we recognize what it means to still live in a warped and crooked generation.
Well, in Philippi, just as with Corinth and some of these other churches, were metropolitan centers of vice. Philippi was on the Via Ignatia, the road from the east to Rome, and it would have had a tremendously metropolitan sort of clientele, and probably every pleasure known to people could be found there, right? Every vice.
And part of it was their religion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I like you brought up the word crooked, Albert, and the Greek word for that. Actually, we get our word scoliosis from it, the disease of a twisted back, right? Scolios, to be crooked, winding, or curved. And they curve away from Christ, from God, is kind of the understanding. And the other word there, perverse, also means corrupt, taking us back to the time of the flood. Corrupt. The earth had corrupted its ways. That's kind of the world we live in. Yes, we live in a majority Christian culture, but I think often it's in name only. I'm not convinced it's always godly.
And I
it's
think
Christian in name.
Yeah, and I excuse me, Brent. And I think a lot of people out there that may be listening are still asking themselves, you know, why are we in this mess, and how come evil just seems to constantly have the upper hand? What's the church's answer to that?
The church's answer to why. Why does evil continue? I think evil continues because God allows for us to continue to have agency. God doesn't want love that is conscripted, that's manipulated, that is demanded. And God gives us the ability to choose. And so we live in a world that represents the risk that comes with our own ability to choose. So it's going to continue. As long as God is going to treat us with love, this chaos is going to continue because we're going to continue to make bad decisions.
But there is hope.
But there is hope.
There seems a time that God's going to say, all right, we've got to bring this to an end. And I love the new covenant promise in Jeremiah, and I repeat it again in Hebrews. God is going to write his law in the minds and hearts of his people. I will shine as a light by nature. I'm not going to have to feel like I'm working up the light to bear it. It's just going to happen. Oh, I want that.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on. Both of you have really summarized some important concepts that Paul brings out in the epistle, but oftentimes we wrestle with. But next week, we're going to look at another theme in Paul, which is confidence. Confidence only in Christ. My thanks to Naomi Busby and Faith Christensen, our program engineers, and to all of you for listening in. Until next time, for The Good Word, I'm Phil Mothersbaugh.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.